Hi everyone, this is your host 林家乔 from REEI. Welcome to our podcast program. I'm with my colleague Zhao Ang today.
Hello everyone, this is Zhao Ang.
Last time we talked about a report from the IEA, International Energy Agency, that looked into China's pathway toward carbon peaking and carbon neutrality. We also discussed the issues on energy consumption, carbon emissions reduction, methane emissions reduction, and the two scenarios, which are accelerated transition scenario, so-called ATS, and announced pledges scenario, so-called APS. And we also talked about something on electric vehicles, cement production plus CCUS, and financing. If you are interested in it, please feel free to give it a listen to the episode.
Today, we will continue our discussion on the report, Energy Sector Roadmap to Carbon Neutrality in China. We are going to focus on three major parts. First one is about China's economic development trajectory and the carbon reduction pathway. Second one is about the economic restructuring and the relevant energy consumption structure. Third one is about feasibility of investing in the low carbon technology. Before we touch those key points, I think it's good for our listeners to know more about China's climate and energy policy evolution and the essential institutions of climate and energy policy making. So, Jiaqiao, could you please quickly describe the changes of China's climate energy policy in the past like 2 decades?
Sure. There's a timeline IEA report is giving to the audience. As you can see from the graph, I mean, for energy policy, there are two major aspects. One is energy efficiency, which is measured by energy consumption intensity. In the current 14th five-year plan, and there's the energy consumption target. That's so-called dual energy consumption target. Apart from energy efficiency, renewable energy is one of the other major measures in China's energy policy. And for climate change, that's evolving from the carbon market, its establishment, to the NDC submitted under the Paris Agreement, and all the way to the carbon neutrality pledge last year. So this is the timeline of the major energy and climate policy milestone events. What do you think, who is playing the key roles in terms of climate and energy policy making in China? I mean, what are the major institutions?
Yeah, the responsibility are shared among the national and the local government bodies. For example, in the top level, it's a state council chaired by the premier, and the other bodies, including National Energy Commission and some specific leadership group on like carbon peak and carbon neutrality, or on the climate change and energy conservation and emission reduction. And the major part, I think, in China's climate and energy policy institutions are located in the ministerial levels. Two ministries are the key players. The first one is NDRC, National Development and Reform Commission. Second one is the Ministry of Ecology and the Environment. These two ministries are the key players in informing the top policy making and also regulating, enforcing the policy implementations in the provincial and the local levels. The third level, between these two ministries, I think there's one department I have to see a little bit about, because it's called Department of Climate Change, which was subsidiary of the NDRC, but through the restructuring of the Chinese government a few years ago, now it belongs to the Ministry of Ecology and the Environment. And in the provincial government, I think the Provincial Development and the Reform Commissions and the Provincial Energy Administration are the key players for the implementation of the policies.
Thank you for the introduction. Maybe we can move to the first topic of our discussion today, the state of the Chinese economy, according to the IEA newly released report.
Right. China's development in the future is the fundamental issue to discuss particularly when we talk about the carbon emission trajectory. The IEA believes that China's in the energy input problem in the economic development is that in the process of improvement, that means high carbon energy is seeking low carbon replacement. Still, China relied on the coal power in a huge dominant percentage, but if we compare to about 20 years ago, that percentage was even higher. So what was the past? From 2000 to 2020, China's per capita GDP growth rate was much higher than the world average, and the proportion of industrial and service GDP gradually increased. In 2020, last year, the two sectors together accounted for about 90% of the annual national GDP. So by 2020, China's per capita GDP was close to the world average.
So let me introduce a little bit what's in the IEA report about the future, what the future look like. So the report puts economic and energy indicators in together, because I mean IEA is an international energy agency, so they want to investigate both of the factors, the indicators at the same time, economic one and energy one. So the biggest change in economic indicators in the past 20 years is GDP and GDP per capita. So in 20 years time, it increased 4 times. And if you see the energy indicator, total energy consumption in China, they increased 3 times. So the energy related carbon emissions increase accordingly, it's also increasing 3 times. And energy consumption intensity and consequently the carbon intensity, they both fell by about 40%. So this is the basic energy and economic indicators from that report.
Yeah, I just want to put China's past developments into the global context. You know, according to economist William Nordhaus, he argues that in the past 3 decades, in the global economic development, the carbon emission and the carbon intensity of GDP hasn't been achieving a desiring result. That means, although average annual carbon emission per unit GDP, which so-called carbon emission intensity of GDP, decreased about 1.8% a year, but that rate hasn't been changed in the past 3 decades. That means although we have done a lot of efforts to increase our commitment objectives of climate change policy, but that hasn't shifted the global economic development model of model from carbon fossil fuel dependence to the renewable dependence. So at this time, by 2021, basically the world economy still heavily depend on fossil fuels. A global average fossil fuel percentage in all energy mix is still much higher than 80%. So I think even China achieved a great success in economic development with less energy consumption to support higher economic growth. But China's development hasn't, still in the same trajectory as the global economic development and the relationship with carbon emission. So this is a perspective I would like to share when we talk about China's economic development in the past in the global context.
Yes, thank you for sharing of the economic impacts on the future China's emissions and energy consumption. So next, let's look at IEA's energy-related carbon emission scenario. So if you remember last time we mentioned the 2 scenarios in the IEA new report, one is ATS, the other one is APS. So APS is the announced pledges scenario. So under the APS, they compare the APS with the Chinese forecasts on the carbon emissions from the Chinese research institutions, which is a range, and APS is at the bottom level of that range, which is understandable because the APS scenario for CO2 emissions of energy-related sector in China, that's at the lower band of the Chinese forecasts. But if you see the stated policy scenario, which is called STEPS, STEPS is much higher than the current Chinese institutions forecast, and it's way higher than the APS scenario. I think this is to some extent understandable because the STEPS scenario is based on the stated policy. So for example, the energy intensity target, the dual target, and the five-year plan. But the APS scenario, that was based on the announcement of China's pledge, long-term pledge of 2060 carbon neutrality. So I should say it's understandable there is a huge gap between these two because, I mean, some of the policies are not in place because the pledges was announced only last year. So during the year, 1 year time, so some of the policies, I think, are not in place for China to show it to the world, I mean, how they can achieve 2060 carbon neutrality pledges. So this is my viewpoint.
Yeah, I think that two scenarios comparing help us to understand what we committed to do now and what we should do according to the long-term carbon reduction target. So we can talk about the primary energy demand and its relationship with carbon emission in the APS scenario. So according to the IEA's analysis, by 2030 in China's energy mix, about 26% comes from renewables and other low carbon technology like nuclear. And by 2060, that percentage will increase to 80%. And total energy emission in 2020 was 11 billion tons, I mean, from the energy sector. And by 2030, that number still same because IEA's reports suggest China's carbon peak happened between 2025 and 2030. Ideally, it's better to happen in 2025. And by 2060, China's energy sector's carbon emission will become net zero. And what we can say about the main characteristic of China's energy sector is that still, in terms of the primary energy needs, more than 60% comes from coal power. So that's the very unique feature for China's energy system, and also the biggest challenge for China to decarbonize its energy sector. Of course, with fossil fuel use falling rapidly, the share of renewables in total energy rise from only 12% in 2020 to 60% in 2060. So that is the projection from IEA team talking about China's energy sector decarbonization.
Yes, I think one thing I want to comment is on the proportion of coal. So the stated policy scenario, coal consumption from now on to the next 40 years, they remain similar. I mean, the proportion is similar. But that's not making that much sense to me, actually, because China released a new kind of policy recently, I mean, stating China will not build and financing the overseas coal. And then I think in our previous episode, we discussed this issue. And this a movement of phasing out overseas coal will have an impact on the domestic coal. So I should say the stated policy is a bit underestimate China's kind of commitment of phasing out coal quicker.
Thank you, Jia Qiao. Let me talk about the carbon emission reduction in power generation. As we discussed in the previous episode, we talked a lot about the short term from now to 2030. But this episode, we are focusing on the long term from 2030 to 2060. So in IEA's examination, the biggest contribution to energy demand comes from solar. It's almost 50%. It's about 44%. And the next one is wind power. Then get support from nuclear, bioenergy, and the other fuel switching. But in order to achieve the net zero, China has to use some negative emission technology like CCUS to help to address the emission from industries and the transport. So I think this is very important to say, if China wants to achieve net zero of carbon emission in energy sector, the biggest challenge is the power sector. Then after that is transport and industries. We'll go to discuss in details about that specific sectors later on.
That's right. We can now move on to the power sector, actually. So in terms of the electricity demand, industry, construction, I mean building and construction, plus transport, they will account for the highest proportion of the power demand in 2060, according to the IEA forecast. And electrolysis of water to produce hydrogen could not be ignored, because from 2030 onwards, it consumed lots of power to produce hydrogen using water. So this is something you can spot from the IEA forecast. And also the power generation sources, you can see in 2060, renewable energy plus nuclear energy, they will account for close to 95% in total of the energy, the power generation produced by those two energy sources. And the remaining 5% is fossil fuel powered power plants plus CCUS. So this is the overview of what will it look like in 2060, according to the IEA forecast. Okay, so after talking about economic energy consumption, carbon emissions, and also the power consumption, power kind of mix in 2060, let's take a look at its relationship with the economic restructuring. So the IEA report, they use restructuring a lot. As far as I understand, that mainly talks about how the economy related, I mean, industries, for example, industrial sector, construction and building, transport sector, so how, and even service sector, so how they can reduce their energy consumption and the relevant CO2 emissions. So if you look at the industrial energy consumption in primary energy mix, there are several major subsectors like the steel, cement, and also aluminium. These are three major ones. And because they use lots of coal, oil, and natural gas. And that's the three subsectors that needs a special attention from the policymakers, I mean, to formulate the policy to decarbonize those three subsectors quicker. And if you see China's energy consumption structure, and that determines that coal is still the key, because that constitutes more than kind of 60% of the total energy consumption. And more than 60% of the coal are being used for power generation, and about 30% that's for industrial sector. And 67% of the electricity consumption, they come from industrial production. So put this in the perspective of speaking, like more than two-thirds of China's energy consumption is used by the industrial sector. So how to decarbonize the industrial sector is the key for China's pathways to net zero emissions of the energy-related emissions. So industrial production is the foundation of China to achieve carbon neutrality.
Yeah, I think this is the headache challenge for climate policy makers, not only in China, but also beyond. How can China help to reduce the coal consumption? We know in September this year, President Xi mentioned China will suspend the overseas coal power-related investment. particularly under the One Belt and One Road initiative. And this is a step forward, but we have to think about the domestic co-consumption, particularly when the energy supply has some dramatic event, like a shortage of energy supply, the co-consumption might become a more controversial issue when we put into the long-term climate policy. But anyway, I think I want to talk about the China's co-consumption in context of the global picture. You know, I just mentioned China's energy mix is unique. The co-consumption, a co-percentage is the highest around the world. And that based on top of that, that's the why China's carbon emission is a big issue, because it so heavily depends on the coal. And as Jiaqiao mentioned, if we combine the final end use, including the primary energy and also electricity, more than two-thirds of the energy consumption come from industries. And the heavy industries, the top three, right? The steel, cement, and chemicals. So I think for that reason, the IEA report suggests if China want to reduce the carbon emission in the long term, what China has to put the most resources into is in renewables. And in the analysis, it mentions apart from the avoid demand, because by the efficiency measures, China can reduce the power demands in a big chunk of the total consumption. And by behavior change, China can also reduce the total energy demand. But the biggest part come from electrification, because that can improve the energy use efficiency in the grid deal. And then we also have to give the big share to hydrogen in terms of the energy consumption in the heavy industries and also in the long distance transport. And part of that, in addition, of course, the renewables is the biggest part to help China to reduce the coal dependence. So I think this is something we need to bear in mind to think about how China can use all kinds of measures to reduce its dependence of the coal, particularly in the second sector.
That's right. And it's good to see how IEA put these mitigation measures into different sectors. So they have a graph showing, for example, for the transport sector, industry, and building. So how much fossil energy should be reduced and how much renewable energy and electricity should be increased by each sector. So let me explain further a little bit. So in the construction, the building sector, coal, oil, gas, and biomass, I should say they were equally balanced with similar reduction potential, and the increasing part will be how to electrify, especially for the heating, I mean, all of the buildings. So that's the key point, followed by bioenergy use. And for the transport sector, and you can see the reduction is pretty clear. I mean, how to kind of electrify the transport system, I mean, how to convert using the gasoline and diesels based cars, I mean, moving that to the electric vehicle or even hydrogen fuel cells or vehicles. So that's the comparison of reduction and addition. Industry is the main sector, I mean, using lots of coal. So how to reduce coal, that's one thing, one mitigating focus of the industry sector. And how to kind of meet the demand. So IEA gave a focus on electrify the process and also using biofuels, I mean, to meet the gap of the demand. But first of all, to increase the energy efficiency, reduce the energy consumption, that's the first thing to do. Because if you see the scale of the energy consumption in industry, the reduction and addition, and you can see there's kind of an imbalance scale, meaning you need to do energy reduction first and then to find the substitute for the industrial process to replace the fossil fuels with the cleaner fuels. So that's the analysis.
Yeah, correct. For industries, when the dependence on the fossil fuels, particularly coal, has been cut off, what the report suggests to support the industry energy demand comes from four parts. The biggest one is electricity. Even the steel manufacturing can use electricity in the future when the procedure and the processing be transformed. And the second one is about the bioenergy, as you mentioned, bioenergy. And the third one, the fourth one, related to hydrogen and other renewables. So I think, yeah, it's pretty clear to suggest what's the solution for China's industry to become decarbonized. But I think what we want to ask next is about the financing. How can China afford to achieve that kind of pathway? How much money is needed? So I think we are going to talk about that part in a minute.
That's right. But before moving to the investment part, let me just remind our kind of listeners. So the previously discussion on energy forecast, the power demand forecast, and power generation sources forecast, that was under the APS scenario, which is announced pledges scenario.
Yeah, I think IEA is using this policy, announced the policy, pledges scenario to lay out the trajectory of the carbon emission reduction. And I think it's quite relevant. And I think they want to use this as a reference to give some policy recommendations. Of course, we are not going to talk about the policy recommendation in detail, but I think this is the rationale behind they focus on this scenario analysis. So finally, let's move to the feasibility of investing, because as I mentioned, how much money will be needed to support this transition. The question is not whether low carbon technology will be available, but whether the investment in R&D will be sufficient to support the rapid acquisition of low carbon technology and their large scale applications in the very limited time frame. So I think let's remind me of the analysis by, again, the economist Nordhaus. When he mentioned about the future's decarbonization, he mentioned the very under investment of the low carbon technologies in the R&D stage. So that will be the technological solution, apart from finances and the market, like carbon trading mechanism, or carbon trading market. So, you know, in China, we have to look back to the past 5 years, how China investment in the energy sector looks like, and how additional investment China need to put in the next 3-4 decades. According to the report, in China's energy sector investment, it's about 400 billion Chinese yuan by 2020. So it's a similar level between 2016 and 2020. But by 2030, the annual investment in the energy sector will increase about 10%. It's about 4,400 billion Chinese yuan. So it seems like not a big jump. Although by 2016, that investment will increase about 60%. So about 6.5 trillion Chinese yuan every year. So this is a big picture about the financing situation that China need to face. I'm not sure. So because the investment always related to the economic development, economic growth. So in the future, when China GDP growth slowed down much lower than like before 2015, how that level or scale the investment can still be there to support this transition.
Right. So next, let's look at the investments in emerging technologies in different sectors, because they are so different. especially for the ones that are really hard to abate the emissions, for example, the heavy industry and long distance transport. So the IEA report, they gave some investment kind of analysis on these emerging technologies in these two sectors. So as you can see from the APS scenario, all the way from now to 2060, and they categorize the technologies into on the market, demonstration stage, and the ones in the large prototype stage. So the investment hotspots, you can see that's different for different period of time by different sector. And for heavy industry, you can see from now on to the next 20 years, so lots of the technologies, I should say, they are already on the market, the emerging reduction technology. But for the long distance transport, some of the emerging technologies in terms of that ones in demonstration stage and large prototype, they are still being developed and the proportion is increasing. And the huge boom of these demonstration and prototype technologies will be having a huge role in the later part, say from 2040 to 2060, to play a major role in terms of reduced long distance transport emissions.
IEA's analysis based on the scenarios is a very informative policy tools to help the policymakers to understand the long-term changes of the energy sector and help them to prepare shifting or changing the energy system to face the climate change. But sometimes we have to think about the short-term shocks, like in the energy supply system, the fossil fuel industry is always not stable in the long term, sometimes due to the natural disasters and also geopolitical reasons. The price of the fossil fuels varies a lot, particularly the oil and the natural gas. So China is also thinking about this potential challenge. So years ago, already start to think about the energy transition, reducing the coal dependence, meantime reducing its import level of the oil, because more than two-thirds of the oil consumption in China coming from abroad. So I think it's also really a key issue about energy security. When I think about the power outage in recent weeks across a lot of regions in China. So I think this is a quite interesting episode. It is quite interesting time for us to observe how the events will be developing in the near future, in the next 3 months, how the China's energy supply becoming more normal and how they absorb the ever-increasing price of the energy, particularly fossil fuels. And that's just keep an eye on the ongoing episode of the China's energy supply challenges. So it's interesting for us to know more about how China's researchers and the policymakers give more policy measures in the near future. Then we may have more factors and more information to project the China's energy sector decarbonization pathway.
That's right. So thank you for Zhao Ang to mention the current blackouts and power shortage issue. I think we have an episode on the power shortage and the reasons behind it and the newly released NDRC coal pricing policy. So if you are interested, please give it a listen. And also be sure to check our first episode of this IEA newly released China Focused Report. So hope you enjoy our talk today. If you have any questions about this episode, you are welcome to contact us via email info@iei.org.cn or through LinkedIn by searching IEEI. We wish our listeners stay well and be healthy. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye.